And welcome now to the midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and the Wisconsin fixture, that is to say, the Madison Symphony Orchestra, is performing this weekend, three concerts, as is the usual case with that ensemble. One on Saturday, Friday night at 7:30, Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30, a program that includes Mozart's Prague Symphony and also La Mer by Debussy, his great sea canvas. And then two works for piano and orchestra, the Burlesque in D minor by Richard Strauss and the delightful Piano Concerto in G by Ravel. And the soloist for the occasion is with me in our studio. And first things first, so inquiring minds want to know, how do you say your name?
Well, first things first, I'm delighted to be here.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
Well, you know, I am French-Canadian, so it would be Marc-André Hamelin, but I've been living here for, my God, since 1980, so Marc-André Hamelin is my preferred way, since if I really insisted on pronouncing it in the right way, nobody would recognize me when my name is mentioned.
It would be hard to look it up, wouldn't it,
yes,
from hearing it.
And I'm perfectly happy with that.
Now, you have this great voice, which few people know. Either that or you have a cold, but it's do you do any singing?
I did some singing in choirs, you know, and occasionally the odd appearance in the Madrigal group when I was in Philadelphia. You know, but otherwise, no, I'm not trained, but I've always liked to sing.
Sing while you're playing the piano, that kind of thing, you know? The piano
I sing internally.
Well, that's a great way to do it, too. But you have this, of course, how many? Did you say 80?
Close to it, yes.
CDs.
Yes. Most of them, I think three-quarters of them, pretty much on the Hyperion label, with whom I've had an association since I think the first recording came out in 94. So there you have
it's a great label to be associated with.
Oh, they're wonderful. I think they're really the best independent label, classical label in the world right now.
So 80 CDs you would have to have, and you do have this incredibly broad repertory. What is on all of those CDs?
Well, from very early on, I've had a desire to explore obscure repertoire. I mean, yes, you know, the core repertoire is essential. It could never not be a part of what I do or for what anybody else does, but there are some really, and I don't have to tell you this, of course, I mean, you deal with this every day. I mean, there's some really marvelous things that really don't belong to people's consciousness, and they've never heard. And I think that if they were exposed to some of these things, they might say, well, yes, how didn't I live with this, you know, before? And they might even return to these things. So I don't perform something just because it's obscure, but because I think it's good and it should be heard more. And if I can make a dent by the time I can no longer do this, you know, I will have been very happy.
Well, one of the relatively obscure composers that you seem to have started with earlier in life was Alcan, of all people.
Yeah, Charles Valentin Alcan.
Yeah, a bit of an eccentric.
Certainly, but his body of work is really rather impressive. And if he hadn't been so much of a recluse, if he'd been a better self-promoter,
because, so often the case.
Even before he reached 40, I mean, he sort of holed himself up, rarely leaving his house and not concertizing. But he continued to write, and his music, most of his music was published and is now available, still available. He would have been, I think, a much more major force in 19th century music.
He was certainly in France, in Paris, in the crux of a real, I don't know if you'd call it a renaissance exactly, but a real fermentation of music.
Oh, certainly.
Late 19th century with a lot of things going on.
And he was born in that magic sort of area, within that magic sort of area in the early 1810s. I mean, Chopin, 1810, and Schumann as well, and Mendelssohn, 1809. He was born in 1813, same year as Wagner.
Yes, right. Yes. Rather different, though.
Yes, and of course, let's not forget Liszt in 1811.
Absolutely not. Well, also, another composer that comes to mind in all this conversation is Marc-André Hamelin. and you know, not generally known.
On a much smaller scale.
Yes, but some wonderful stuff.
Well, thank you.
Now you have you have this list, a series of etudes. Is it 12 in total, or are there more?
No, it's a series of 12 etudes in all the minor keys, which I wrote very, very leisurely over a period of 25 years. I mean, there was a period of about 12 years in the middle when I didn't write any. I mean, I sort of ran dry, and then something got me started again, and I completed this set in just a few years. But they also got published, and I think a few people, especially young people, are playing them now, which is really great. But composing will never be my main activity.
Well,
obvious reasons.
Yeah, if you've already recorded 80 CDs of other people's stuff, it would be sort of hard to catch up with that. Plus, you have this concert life, which is yes, extensive. Mm-hmm. Based in Boston, you play in Boston often?
Yes, certainly.
Well, this is one of those 12 etudes. It's number 9, and these each of the 12 is in the style or reminiscent of another composer or no?
Well, actually, as it turns out, 6 of them are original pieces and 6 of them are arrangements, although some of the original ones are actually stylistic pastiches. Mm-hmm. Just like there's one that's based on, it's an imitation of Scarlatti's style.
We'll get to that.
Okay. But this one that you're about to play is an arrangement of Rossini's La Danza.
Here it is, composer and performer Marc-André Hamelin with this etude number 9 after Rossini. Thank you. Etude number 9 after Rossini, the work of Marc-André Hamelin. He played it and also composed it. And you wouldn't play that on this show for us next time we have a piano available?
I'd have to have several weeks' preparation.
That's quite a handful. And
I agree.
Well, speaking of hands full, though, you have a couple of pieces that you're going to be playing with the Madison Symphony tomorrow night, Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, that are also, in addition to being hands full, much bigger hands full. You have the, and how common is it these days to play actually two pieces on a program for a soloist?
Well, if they're short, it is actually very common.
More and more these days.
Yeah, if I perform the burlesque of Strauss, for example, for which we'll hear tomorrow. It's short enough that playing something else with it is perfectly acceptable and even maybe desirable.
So the Strauss, the burlesque implies that there's good humor involved. Do you feel that in that piece?
Well, yes. I mean, it's not overt comedy.
No.
But for the period, certainly, it certainly was lighthearted enough to justify that title.
The person, I think, did he write it for Hans von Bülow? Am I remembering that?
It was
right?
Eugen d'Albert, actually.
Oh,
well,
d'Albert.
That's who it's dedicated to. Mm-hmm. I don't know actually who gave the first performance.
I think, if I remember right, he intended it for Bülow, who said, no, this thing is unplayable nonsense. But, of course, he was kind of a curmudgeon anyway.
Oh, yes. I mean, didn't he say the same thing about Tchaikovsky B-flat minor?
Yes, and a couple of other things, too, which have since caught on, you know.
Yes.
And then you're playing the Ravel Piano Concerto in G, which is said often to be jazz-inspired, but there's all kinds of other stuff in there, too.
Oh, of course. I mean, the jazz elements are really rather subtle. I mean, they're on the rhythmic scale, and also on... there's some blue harmonies there, you know, and he was, I think, at least partly influenced by hearing Gershwin. We know that they met, of course.
Sure.
And Ravel was really quite impressed by and had a great esteem for Gershwin, and that's documented.
Famous story, and I haven't double-sourced it, but it's because it's too much fun to pass along, that Ravel and Gershwin in conversation, Gershwin talked about taking lessons, you know, composing lessons from Ravel, and Ravel said this would have been about... 1930 or something, 28 maybe. Young man, how much money do you make? And Gershwin said, well, about $100,000 a year. And Ravel is said to have said, well, then I should be taking lessons from you.
Mm-hmm.
No, we don't need a double source set. It's fine the way it is.
But yes, I don't know how much of a teacher Ravel would have been, really, but I think all you need to know is just study his scores, you know, and everything is there. The astonishing refinement, and if you just look at the orchestral writing, I mean, it's just full of miracles.
Yeah, and you use that word refinement, which I think applies very appropriately to that piano concerto. There's so many delicate touches scattered through the many notes that the pianist has to keep up with.
Yes. It's not particularly pleasant to play, I think.
How so?
Ravel was not known to be a very wonderful pianist. I mean, he could get around. I mean, I think his hands were very small. Although apparently he had this remarkably long thumb, you know, which he could do things with that we can't. But basically, he just, when he played for France, he just could get around the notes and for the more difficult things. But that didn't keep him from really pushing the boundaries as far as pianistic expression was concerned.
And so this is difficult for the pianist. Why?
Well, in every possible sense. I mean, some of the physicality is a little bit awkward. But ultimately, just to get the right mood, the right spirit, you know, can be very, very difficult to achieve, given the sometimes awkward quality of the writing.
Lendler, so usually that's, we think of that as, you know, Schubert or some, you know, German country origin dances. What about these Ländler that you have written?
Oh, my goodness. There were, I made them part of a collection of easier pieces that I published in 2000. And this friend of mine, Don Manildi, who is has been for many years the curator of the International Piano Archives at the University of Maryland, is also a very good pianist, and he wanted to make a CD devoted to pianist composers. And his criteria was that these pianist composers had to have made commercial recordings. So we have people on this, like, oh my God, let me see the list here. Joseph Hoffman and Horowitz,
yeah, sure,
even.
Yeah.
Moritz Rosenthal, Michel Levitsky, and Cortot. And for some reason, he wanted to include me there.
And so you're about 100 years younger than most of those people.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, they take us back to the turn
of the
century.
I think I am the youngest on this. But it's a quiet, rather reflective piece. And let the listeners judge.
Ländler by Marc-André Hamelin. Ländler, as played there by pianist Donald
Manildi,
thank you, who has recorded a whole bunch of these pieces by pianist composers, one of whom is my guest today, Marc-André Hamelin, who's in Madison to perform with the Madison Symphony this weekend. And here's one more from Marc-André Hamelin. And this is what we mentioned earlier, this homage to Scarlatti. And this is your etude number 6 from this set of 12?
Yes, it is, yeah.
And the pianist for the occasion, I assume you've recorded this too, probably many times over, but we just happen to have this pianist, Victoria Lakisova, performing it. And now, so is this, how far away from Scarlatti is this? The Rossini was based on themes from Rossini.
Well, this is it's not based on anything thematically. It's not thematically related to Scarlatti, but it's an imitation of the style, and with a few sort of almost vulgar humorous touches.
Can't wait. is humor in music, and certainly humor in the music of my guest today, Marc-André Hamelin. That was his etude number 6 out of 12, and would we say in the style of Scarlatti?
Yes.
And the pianist...
But not quoting.
No, I just certainly didn't hear any quotations there, although you'd have about, 600 sonatas to choose from if you were going to go that way. That was Victoria Lakisova playing one of the easier ones, you said, of the 12.
I think so, yes.
Wow. Okay. Well, you're going to, I'm sure, make it look easy when you play the Ravel Piano Concerto and the Richard Strauss Burlesque with the Madison Symphony before you take off on another busy day, Marc-André. This Brahms that you recorded back around 2005, and we'll hear the slow movement of the second piano concerto. It worked out for you?
Oh, absolutely. It was a marvelous collaboration.
And you're performing here with, say, the Dallas Symphony, Andrew Litton conducting, and just a word about this particular movement. We're going to hear the slow movement.
I remember this recording came out of 4 live performances. And so it is live, and this particular performance was, for some reason, you know, the most moving of the lot, and so that's why we chose it for the recording.
Here we go, and looking forward to hearing all about your performances this weekend with the Madison Symphony. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you very much.